I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. The Baltimore City Health Department has received its first allotment of Pfizer and Moderna coronavirus vaccines. With limited supplies, what are the guiding principles that will determine who gets vaccinated and when? With a few different approaches being tried around the country with varying degrees of success, what models will Baltimore City follow to get residents protected as quickly and efficiently as possible? My guest is Dr. Tish the Commish, Dr. Letitia Giraza, the Baltimore City Health Commissioner. Plus, what can a dating website tell us about the nature of human individuality? Dr. David Linden, a neuroscientist at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, joins me to talk about his latest book, Unique. First, the news. And good afternoon. Welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's jump right in. My first guest today is Dr. Tish the Commish, as she's known on Twitter. Dr. Letitia Giraza is the Health Commissioner of Baltimore City. Dr. Giraza, welcome back. Always good to talk
to
you.
Thanks, Tom. It's always good to be on your show, too.
So let's get an update about where things stand in the city as compared to the state. Just about an hour ago, a couple hours ago, the State Department of Health reported another day with more than 3,000 new coronavirus cases. 29 people died from the virus yesterday. That's 4 days in a row that we've had more than 3,000 new cases of COVID-19. That's actually never happened before during the pandemic. We've got, you know, increased hospitalizations, and we've got a positivity rate in the city, or excuse me, in the state, of about 8.56%. So how does that all compare with us here in Baltimore City?
Sure. So I am happy to say that our positivity here in the city is at 7%, but still well above where we would want it to be. We have set a goal of a positivity of less than 5%. With adequate testing occurring. The city's averaging about 3 new deaths per day. That's our most recent 7-day average, and 231 new cases per day.
And 231 compares how to, say, how things were going in June or July, you know, in the summer, 6 months ago?
Yeah, that's a great question. So 231 is still well above the peak that we experienced in late July and early August. Even then, our highest peak at that time was 160 new cases. So this is still well above where we were during that time.
So the arc of this is not headed down yet. We are still encountering an increasing difficulty with this, the spread of the disease.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at where we are, and you can find this information on our website at coronavirus.baltimorecity.gov, you've seen a couple of dips, you know, here and there since really late October was when we started to see the number of cases pick up exponentially. You know, we believe that some of that could be related to restrictions, but we also are seeing spikes, you know, quite likely related to gatherings, holiday gatherings specifically. Thanksgiving, we saw a spike shortly after Thanksgiving. We saw a spike again following Christmas. So, you know, we're still watching the data very closely.
So on Sunday, across the state, 1,950 people were reported to be hospitalized because of COVID-19. Yesterday, or as of today, 7 more people in hospitals. Officials have, I guess, changed slightly the way they're calculating things. Last week, there were folks that said that the way reporting requirements have changed could start making the hospitalization numbers look a little higher. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I know Hopkins, I believe in University of Maryland, the way that they were capturing, you know, hospitalizations and classifying them, I think that that did change slightly. And so that they, you know, now may be capturing a few more. I think on the flip side, it does give us, you know, a more accurate picture of, you know, just what our hospitals are experiencing.
And you mentioned that the goal is to get to that 5% positivity rate, which, you know, way back in the beginning of the pandemic, the WHO recommended as a, you know, relatively safe leveled in terms of opening businesses and stuff. Obviously, there's a lot of restaurateurs and people in other businesses around the city that are anxious to reopen to sort of normal ways of business. But it doesn't look like that's going to be a possibility anytime real soon. What can you say about that to the small businesses in particular in the city when it comes to chances of, you know, getting out of phase one and into phase two or even phase three?
I'll say that, you know, we're watching the data very closely. You know, we're looking at hospitalizations, we're looking at new case rates, and we want to see those numbers begin to come down. As you mentioned, we're still well above where we were at our peak in the summer, and that's concerning. We are, you know, excited that there is now vaccine available, but we still have a long way to go. And we want to be, you know, very cautious as we're thinking about, you know, loosening restrictions. We would hate to have to reimpose additional restrictions because we loosen restrictions too quickly. Mayor Scott has also really made the commitment that any changes in restrictions, he would give businesses at least a week to be able to adjust and prepare for those changes.
Dr. Leticia Giraza is my guest. She is the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. If you have a question or a comment for Dr. Giraza, our number here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org, and you can tweet us at @midday_WYPR. So, Dr. Giraza, when it comes to vaccines, what is the allotment that Baltimore City has received so far, and how are we doing in terms of administering those vaccines to folks in our city?
Yeah, Baltimore City has received a little over 7,000 vaccines to date, and we've given out over 1,100 vaccines to date.
So when the first vaccines came, it was reported that the city was using just over 2% of its doses. That's by about a week ago, by Tuesday. It got much higher. It was at 21% by Friday. Where do you think it's going to be, say, by this coming Friday? I mean, are things, is the pace quickening or is it getting better?
The pace is quickening. So I want to say that last week was our very first week running a vaccine pod. As such, we wanted to establish operations and make sure that we could get people in smoothly and make sure that the process and logistics were down pat. We will continue to increase the number of available appointments each day, and we'll continue to increase our numbers daily. So we're going to scale up certainly as we have more staffing.
And is staffing a problem? Because we hear nationally that it is, that it's difficult to find people who are trained and able to give these vaccines. Is that a problem here in the city?
Yeah, we've been really fortunate to be able to work with some of our clinical partners, Coppin State, who's provided us with nursing students, Maryland Response, who provided us with clinical volunteers. That's been extremely helpful in helping us to kind of round out our staffing pool. So we are, again, seeking, you know, support from partners, and they've really stepped up.
In terms of the logistics of how you decide to distribute the vaccines, what's the level of autonomy that you have in that regard? Does the state dictate how you have to do it, or do they say, here's your allotment, this is what we've gotten from the federal government, they've, you know, directed Pfizer to send X number of vaccines and Moderna to send X number, so here's your vaccines, each jurisdiction gets X number of doses, and then is it completely up to you to figure out how to distribute those and to figure out how to pay for it?
Yeah, so we have worked with other surrounding jurisdictions to come up with a prioritization schema, taking into account information from the state, from Maryland Department of Health, from the CDC, to really devise, you know, in our priority groups, who is a part of, you know, the different tiers. So this is posted on our website for anyone who's curious. It is subject to change in the event of, you know, changing recommendations from the CDC. But we have, again, been very transparent with who is in each tier and each phase. So again, that's coronavirus.baltimorecity.gov/COVAX, COVAX. You can find our prioritization scheme online.
And there seem to be roughly two different approaches across the country to how those priorities are established. You have New York, for example, in which Governor Cuomo was threatening very harsh penalties for any institutions, hospitals, et cetera, who administered vaccines to people who didn't meet the criteria for the particular phase that they're in, beginning with healthcare workers and people in nursing homes. Yet you had some of these providers, some of these hospitals saying, well, look, we have these extra doses. We have these doses and we don't have enough people to take them in some instances. So we'd like to give them to somebody. And then there are other examples where they're actually throwing away some of the doses of the vaccines because they weren't able to administer them to enough people before they went bad. On the other hand, you have places like Florida where it seems to be kind of loosely organized, in which Governor DeSantis has said, if you're over the age of 65, you can get a vaccine. So you have people camping out overnight, standing online at various places to try to get the vaccine. And there's no distinction about the difference between a 65-year-old and an 85-year-old, or the difference between a person who's in a nursing home or a person who isn't in a nursing home. What's your take on the way these various states are approaching this? How do you think the state of Maryland is going to approach it? And is that the way you think the city of Baltimore should do it as well?
Yeah, so, you know, at this point, a lot of our vaccination efforts, and we're still in phase 1A, really does rely on an honest system, right? So we're working with our clinical and communications team to inform those groups so that they can come and really get that first priority. We still are at a point where there is limited amount of vaccine. And so we do want to hone in on the groups in phase 1A that have been identified as highest risk. Again, we will sometimes see cancellations, but any reserves that we have, you know, we would like to recommit to supporting those in priority group 1A. We have really strived when we developed our vaccination priority list to be equitable in our distribution and to be thoughtful of those that are high risk. And again, if we still have many in priority 1A group that are eligible to receive the vaccine. So as much as we can, again, focus on those individuals and follow the rollout, again, recognizing that there could be changes, you know, depending on, you know, how much vaccine is available. But we do want to be fair in distribution.
And of course, the state of Maryland, in the initial go of this, like the city of Baltimore, was having some trouble getting the doses into arms of people. Those problems have begun to be addressed. And the governor said last week at a press conference that, you know, initially the problem was getting the doses administered. Pretty soon the problem is going to be not having enough doses. Where does the city of Baltimore expect to be on that spectrum? I mean, are we going to have plenty of doses for another 2 weeks, another month? Are we already low on doses? Where do things stand relative to available vaccine and capacity for administering it?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, you know, we're gradually building up our staffing to be able to support more and more vaccinations each day. Again, the amount is still limited, but we're working through that amount. Where it stands right now is we will get typically weekly shipments from Maryland Department of Health. And so there is regular communication with MDH so that we can indicate what our needs are and certainly what we're seeing on the ground as far as, you know, increased demand versus, you know, what our current capacity is.
We have a caller calling in from Kent County, actually. Sydney is on the line. Sydney, welcome to Midday with Dr. Girasa.
Thank you so much. So I'm wondering if someone has had the coronavirus and he's now better, is he now immune and would he get a vaccine?
That's a really great question, Sydney. So what we know about once you've been infected, your body does develop what's called natural immunity. So naturally, you'll produce these things called antibodies that will protect you, but likely only for a short period of time, maybe up to 3 months. When you get the vaccine, and I do recommend, even if you've had COVID, to get the vaccine, we believe that that immunity lasts a lot longer and is a lot stronger. So I would still advise anyone who's had COVID and doesn't have any contraindications to get the COVID vaccine once their priority group is available to get the vaccine.
We have a question on email from Barbara, who I happen to know is a physician at Johns Hopkins, has a question about the disproportionate impact of COVID-19 on communities of color, in particular the Latinx community. And you and the mayor addressed this a week or so before Christmas last month. What specific things are you doing to ramp up testing and vaccine administration for people in communities that are being disproportionately affected?
Yeah, also a great question. So one of the things the city did really early on when we saw the disproportionate impact on the Latinx community was establish one of our first mobile testing sites in 21224, which is one of the zip codes most heavily impacted that we know is home to a lot of our Latinx residents. So we began mobile testing in that area and have subsequently have partners who continue to mobile test. We were able to expand and do additional mobile testing there because we recognize that that ability to test and identify those that need to be isolated or that need to quarantine because they've been in contact with someone is so crucial to helping to slow and stop the spread. We worked closely with community-based organizations to establish a Latinx task force that was established this summer. That included also the mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs with a focus on certainly testing and identification, but also connection to resources. Some of those being city resources, like our Triage Respite and Isolation Hotel, which houses residents that can't safely isolate or quarantine, either because of their living situation, perhaps they're in a multi-generational household, or for other reasons, they need a room to themselves. And we were really targeted and focused on hiring bilingual support staff for those sites to encourage our Latinx residents to transition to those sites. I do also just want to highlight the work of our partners, Central del Sol, the Esperanza Center, who have been instrumental in supporting that. And there's too many to name. Sacred Heart Church, there's really too many to name. But again, it really has been a team effort to support the needs of the Latinx community.
Yeah, and by the way, we're going to be speaking with Bishop Lewandowski from Sacred Heart Church over in Highland Town next Monday here on our program. There are anecdotal reports about some contact tracers in the city not having been paid since October. Can you address that? Has that been a problem?
Sure. So, you know, what we have seen is we hired a number of individuals through something called the Baltimore Health Corps program. And it was a unique program. It's a workforce development program that really looks to employ individuals who maybe were unemployed as a result of COVID-19 and subsequently could support in the form of either contact tracing or community health workers. We have had some logistical challenges just because of, again, ensuring that we have enough administrative support to get those individuals paid on time. We're working through it with our Department of Finance and our city payroll service, and we were able to issue a number of checks to individuals on Friday.
I know we need to let you go, but one more question about vaccine reluctance. There are people who are afraid to take the vaccine. Even in nursing homes, there are some reports nationally that some 60% of nursing home staffs are willing to take the vaccine, meaning 40% are not. Here in Maryland, the state reported last week that more than 200 nursing homes had used less than 14% of their allotted doses. How do you address people's fears and trepidations about taking this vaccine?
I think we address them the same way that we've always approached sharing data throughout this response, which is in an accurate and transparent way. There are many things that we still don't know about the virus itself. There are many things that we will continue to learn about the vaccine. But what we do know is that the two vaccines that are being approved and being used currently have been shown to have 94 to 95% efficacy. We do know that you can experience some mild side effects after receiving those vaccines, including soreness, redness at the site, maybe headache and fatigue. We do know that for some individuals, especially those that are younger, those symptoms might be worse after the second dose. What we also know is that much of the fear and the hesitation that is held within the community is based on, you know, historical medical mistrust. There are reasons that people are concerned and are fearful. So as much as we can talk about that and address that, I think the better off we'll be.
And one final question. Phase 1B is going to start soon, we hope. Phase 1A is, the, as we mentioned, the healthcare frontline workers and nursing homes. But 1B is going to open it up considerably. Will there be mass vaccination centers? Are you going to set up a thing like you did for the testing center at Pimlico or at the convention center or in the stadiums? What's your plan for, once this thing gets ramped up, is it going to be in these particular locations?
I think we're looking at multiple locations. And the reason why I say that, so similar to how we had Pimlico as our first city-supported stationary testing site, we also recognized that there were a number of individuals that couldn't get to Pimlico or couldn't get to a stationary location. So we went the route of also setting up mobile testing sites. So I think that given the significance and the need to do this on such a large scale, we will have to have multiple options for people to get vaccinated, which very well may include coming to them or going to senior housing sites or going to people that are in high-risk locations or congregate settings. So I think, it'll be a combination of all of those things to really effectively roll this out.
Dr. Letitia Giraza is the Baltimore City Health Commissioner. We've got a link to the city's COVID-19 dashboard on our website, wypr.org/midday. Dr. Giraza, thank you as always. Appreciate it and look forward to the next time.
Great. Thank you.
Coming up next, a neuroscientist from Johns Hopkins talks about how a dating app became the prompt for his latest book. David Linden joins me to talk about the science of human individuality on the other side of this quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.